All right. Good evening, everyone. And welcome. Welcome to the first meeting. Hello. Good evening.
Hello.
So nice to see all of you. Thank you all for coming. I know it's not easy to come on a Wednesday evening like that to Shaar HaTfila for a shiur. So first of all, I really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much for you to come. Thank you. Not taken to granted. Just as a short brief of what we're going to do here today and in the next, Bezrat Hashem, God willing, 5 weeks, every week on Wednesday. We're going to try to touch the very, very essentials and basic from the very beginning. All right, from the very beginning of what exactly is the Talmud? What exactly is the Gemara? What is the Oral Torah? What is the Talmud? How do we learn Talmud? We'll try to experience it. We'll learn in Chavrutot. We'll give a shiur about it. We'll try to really practice working with the text. And I have to tell you, my commitment to you, if you, God willing, Bezrat Hashem, will attend all the five meetings, my commitment to you is that you'll be able to study and learn by your own. Not a total daf Gemara, not a total page of Gemara, but at least you would have a sense of understanding how to approach it, how to open it. And if you're already experienced, and I appreciate all the experience that came, I hope that we'll dig a little bit into the very essentials, the very basic of what exactly is the Talmud, how it evolved, why do we have it, why do we need to learn it, what is the very essence of it, and hopefully it will, I hope, will enrich your limud, and enrich your learning. And if not, and if it doesn't work, so you'll get the money back, don't worry. There are 3 funds. Each one of you received 3 pages. Please keep it, those yours, all right? Those 2, you can give me it back, and I will bring them next time. If you want to take it to your house, that's fine as well. Just bring it next time, because that's for you, all right? That's for, it will accompany our learning, our limud together, all right? Let's just go over quickly what we have here. So first of all, this is the source sheet, all right? The one that says basic introduction to Talmud, first meeting introduction to the Oral Torah. God willing, every week we're going to have something like that for the specific week we're going to learn. All right, today we're going to discuss the introduction to the Oral Torah. The other source sheet that you have right here is something that I made as well. This is more for your general knowledge and for your interest. It divides the Tanaim, we'll get it in a minute, who they are, what they were, whatever they were doing, but it divides, it takes what we're going to learn, what we're going to know, and it puts it back to the ground, who they were, their names, their families, where they came from. Just to understand, they were human beings. They were very smart. They were very, very wise, but they were human beings. And this page, this source sheet will divide them into different generations, their names. I picked some of them. I think I picked the most. The most important ones. Those are who appear the most throughout our limud, and that's good for you. If you're gonna run into one of those names, you can open this and understand a little bit more about his biography. All right. Unfortunately, I have to say it's all his, and there is no her. All right. Because back then there were maybe one chachama, one female tanait, maybe Bruya. Well, maybe we'll get to that as well. But most of them, as we can understand, were men. And the third one, yes.
Starting out, yes. Just like we don't see Hashem in the story of Megillat Esther, we don't see Hashem.
What do you mean?
Well, when we're looking at the whole Purim story, you don't ever hear about Hashem. Right.
Right.
God is completely hidden, right?
Right.
Okay, so the women.
Are he not? Okay, now I got it. The women I like that one. Their presence is there, but we don't see it.
Abraham couldn't do what Abraham was doing.
Any man, any successful man, stands a successful wife. That's how life works. That's how life works. And the third one, the colorful one, this is a timeline. We will use it. It's very, very useful. Timeline of the Jewish people from the very beginning of the creation, the Briat HaOlam, we read it on Shabbos, all the way to the Holocaust. Now, there are different timelines. If you're going to Google timeline of Jewish history, you're going to get like many other versions of how timeline is. That's the one that I think is kind of the simplest, is the most accurate, there's a lot of political questions about it. But what I don't like it is that it ends in the Shoah. The Jewish nation did not end in the Shoah. All right? It did not. It evolved and even more prospered after the Shoah. What happens today in America and then in Israel is that the Jewish nation, and specifically the Limud Torah, has thrived significantly. But we'll leave it to the last minute. What are we going to have today? So, what are we going to do today? Today we're going to start meeting the very first and basic essential part of our identity. We're all Jews, right? There's no one who's not Jew here. I'm afraid I'm not going to embarrass anyone. We're all Jews. And Jews is the nation of the Torah. There are other religions. There's Christianity. There is Islam. There is some of the Far East. There's a lot of religions. But something that makes Judaism unique is the fact that we have what is called the Torah. The Torah is what we call the Book of Laws, right? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, back there in Sinai. It gives all the halachot, all the laws and mitzvot and commandments that we need to follow in order for us to live the life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, wants us to live from. There's other books of laws in other religions. There is a Sharia in the Islam, and the Christianity has their own laws, and some of them acknowledge this. It's called the Old Testament, but eventually the word Torah as a book of life, of how you live your life, is something that's very unique to Judaism. But this is not all. This is not everything. One of the very basic things in Jewish identity should be, and is be actually, what we call the Oral Torah. Torah She'be'al Peh. What is Torah She'be'al Peh? Oral Torah is what we believe, another Torah, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that God, gave Moshe Rabbeinu up there in Mount Sinai, along, together with the written Torah, what we have here, Chamisha Chumshei Torah, the written one, He gave him another thing, another Torah, called the Oral One. Why is it called the Oral Torah? Because it's a Torah we cannot and should not write down. Now, I know you know what you're going to say, but there is a Mishnah, there is Gemara, there is Halachot, there are rabbis that write articles, everything is written down today. There are posts on Facebook, there's everything, right? Rabbi tweets. All the rabbis now want to be on Twitter. That's Rabbi tweets, Dvar Torah in like, I don't know, 200 characters, right? This is a new thing. But originally, and we'll get it in a minute, the Oral Torah was the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave to Moshe Rabbeinu on Mount Sinai, and he told him, do not ever, never write it down. Ever. Why? We'll see in a minute. Why do we need to understand the basics of what is Oral Torah and Jewish identity in order to be able to learn Talmud? To know what is Talmud? Why do we need to do that? First of all, I think because Talmud is part of the Oral Torah. All right, what we call the Talmud today, and unfortunately I didn't get one physically. I need to bring one physically to show you exactly how it looks like. And Mishnayot as well, please, if you find Zapril. All right? There's downstairs in the library. Thank you. my assistant. It's okay, Nigdo. First of all, because the Talmud is part of the Oral Torah itself. When we say the Oral Torah, the Torah Shebaal Peh, when we learn the Torah Shebaal Peh, most of the time, we will refer to the Talmud. We will refer to the Mishnah. Mishnah and Talmud. Let's look at it as one group. What is the Mishnah? What is the Talmud? We'll see in a minute. That's the first reason why I think we need to open the basic introduction to Talmud with basic introduction to Oral Torah. The other reason why I think we need to open it with a basic introduction to Oral Torah is because we will not be able to understand how Gemara works. How the Talmud? When I say Talmud and Gemara, this is the same thing. All right, just to make it clear, Gemara and Talmud is the same thing. Gemara is the word in Aramaic. Talmud is the word in Hebrew. Talmud, from the word of lilmod. Gemara is lilmod, to learn in Aramaic. And the other reason why I think we need to dive into the first of all to the basic introduction to Oral Torah is because if we would not understand how the Oral Torah evolved, how we got to what we have today, we would not be able to understand what the Gemara writes. I'm not talking to understand by the language, or by the syntax, or by the grammar. I'm talking about understanding deeply and internalizing what exactly the Chachamim, the sages, back then in the Gemara tried to tell us. What did they do? What is this magnificent work that took like almost 300 years? What is it? If we would not understand the basic of oral Torah, we would not understand the Gemara. That's why the first meeting is going to discuss, we're going to discuss the introduction to oral Torah. The first source, you can see, oh, first of all, if you have any questions, please just, you know, the popcorn, I don't know how you say it in English. In Israel, it's called Shitata Popcorn, the popcorn method. You just pop up and ask, all right? No need to wait for me, whatever, just you can raise your finger, you can just ask, feel free. Look at the first source that you have in your source sheet. This is from Dvarim, from Deuteronomy, from Sefer Dvarim. This is after HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given to Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah, Haseret HaDibrot, Lo Tirtzach, don't kill, Lo Tinav, everything, Lo Lignov, don't steal. Everything we know from the Ten, Haseret HaDibrot, the Ten Testament, how do you say it? The Ten Commandments, thank you. I need help with my English, first time to time, so thank you for that. After he gave him this, there's the Torah repeats the story and stuff, and it says in Dvarim, and the Lord gave me, right, the Moshe Rabbeinu says in his speech to Am Yisrael, and the Lord gave me the two tablets of stone inscribed by the finger of God with the exact words that the Lord has addressed to you on the mountain out of the fire on the day of the assembly. This is, we know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu the Torah. This is Moshe Rabbeinu, he went up to Mount Sinai. Thank you very much. He went up to Mount Sinai, and he received the Torah. But what happened afterwards? What happened after Moshe went up to Mount Sinai, received the Torah, went down, he saw what happened with Egel HaZahav, what with the golden cat, whatever happened there, everything, what next? What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu expect of Moshe and Am Yisrael to do next with this present that he received? You know, any answers? All right, he received the Torah. Teach the others. Thank you. All right, you got the Torah, teach the others. Beautiful. And how do we know that? Look at the first Mishnah. We'll see what a Mishnah is in a second. But look at the second source. This is the very first Mishnah that is taught in every kindergarten to every religious Jewish student in Israel. All right? And this is a very, very important Mishnah that even I think it was 4 or 5, I was taught to memorize it. All right? To say it because this is a very, very basic one, very essential to our identity. And I'll say it in Hebrew and then in English. Moshe kibel Torah misinai. Umasra li Yoshua, ve Yoshua li zkenim, ve zkenim linviim, unviim asaru ala anshei knesset agdola. Hem amru shlosha devarim, hevu metunim badin, ve haamidu talbidim arbe, ve asu siyag la Torah. Moses received the Torah at Sinai and transmitted it to Joshua, Joshua to the elders, well, the elders, we'll see, and the elders to the prophets, and the prophets to the men of the great assembly, and Sheikh Knesset HaGdolah. There was once a Knesset, we know the Knesset of Israel in Jerusalem, right? This is like the Israeli parliament, but this is not the first Knesset. The people of Israel had a Knesset, it was called the Knesset HaGdolah. This was the form, the assembly, all right, of people called the Sanhedrin. All right, where they sat together, 72 men sat together and decided what halachot will be and what is the law for the back then, what is called the Israeli authority. All right, the Jewish authority of back then. They said three things. Who are they? The men of the great assembly and Sheikh Knesset HaGdolah. They said three things. They said more than three things. All right, but the Mishnah wants to say the three things. First, be patient in administration of justice. It's very interesting. Second, rise many disciples, right? Have a lot of students. And third, make a fence around the Torah. What is the make a fence around? We understand the first one, right? Because when you're a judge and you're sitting and you have a lot of power. You can say someone you're going to die and you're going to live. There's a lot of power in being a judge. That's why you need to restrain your power. What about the second one? Second one is to make a lot of disciples, a lot of students. We can understand that. You want to spread, right? You want to lament, to teach the Torah to other generations. You need students in order to pass it forward. And what is the third one? And to make a fence around the Torah. What is to make a fence around the Torah? Yes?
To prevent what you don't want influences to enter into Torah, Das Torah, and to also prevent and also ensure control about what Das Torah leaves the fence, outside the fence.
Beautiful. This is what the Rambam says. Rabbeinu Moshe ben Maimon, one of the sages back then in Spain, in 1100 and whatever, in the 12th century. All right, that's exactly what he says. He said, what is the sosiag la Torah? What is to build a fence around the Torah? That means not everything can come in, not everything can come out. We need to select. What do we want to enter in our culture, in our laws? What do we don't want? But another answer, what is Siyag Torah? Is basically to build a fence around the Torah. There's a Torah. And the Torah is not all the time very, very understandable. I'll give you an example. We'll see it in a minute. Let's talk about, we just finished Sukkot, right? We all had our four species, right? Ulekachtem lachem, anaf etzarvod, arvei nachal, kapot marim, right? We have the right. And we have the et pri et hadar. That's how the Torah describes the etrog, the etrog, pri et hadar, the fruit of the hadar tree, of a cistern tree. All right? Cistern? No.
Citrus.
Citrus. Thank you. Citrus tree. But how do we know this is an etrog? There's like oranges, it could be a lemon, it can be, I don't know, whatever else that is like from the citrus family. How do we know it's an etrog? And everyone are going and buying their own etrog, and they're looking at their etrog like, let's see how complete it is, how perfect it is. They're spending a lot of, you know, when we came here and we had to buy the four species, I have to tell you, so expensive, so expensive. Usually in Israel, you buy a very good four species set, with a very nice yellow, big etrog, with, let's say, no more than, I don't know, 90 shekels.
Wow.
All right? Here, I was like, I paid like $90 for like the lowest. It's insane. I don't know, it's insane. And it came from Muncie, not from Israel. This is another discussion why. I don't know why I pay so much for an etrog from Muncie, but this is this is another discussion. But how do we know it's an etrog? How do you know that? Thank you. We have the Siyag Torah. We have the fence. What is the fence? Fence says what is in. What is out? It gives you borders. It gives you a way to understand where your limits are. What do you need to do? What you don't need to do? What is correct and what is wrong? And how do we know what the fence is? How do we know that an etrog is the pre-etz hadar? You know what the answer is? Tradition, right? No, really, it's tradition. Because of tradition. Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu, we believe, gave Moses at Mount Sinai, he gave him the law of Sukkot, the four species. But along with it, what is written in the written Torah that it's a pri etz hadar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave Moses one more law. This pri etz hadar, this is an etrog, and Moshe Rabbeinu gave it to Joshua, and Joshua gave it, passed it forward to the elderly, and the elderly to the prophet, and so on. It go on until it got to our generation, because this is what Jews do. Jews pass things forward. That's what we do. We get things from our grandfather, from our grandfathers, from everything. We preserve things. Almost archaeological. Almost. All right? It's a very, Judaism, it's a very, very, let's say, facing past religion. It's a very facing past religion. We look all the time at our backs. What did my father do? What did my grandfather do? How did they act? What song did they sing on Shabbos evening? I know, I remember my father went to a shul and he had this very specific tune. I want to use it. This is kind of my identity. This is what we do. So it's not only in this. You read the finger? Okay, sorry. Now you read the finger. It's not only in the tunes, but it's also according to halacha. And look at source number 3. How do we know? One of the sources that say that all the Torah was given to Moshe Rabbeinu, both the written one and the oral one. And Rabbi Levi, this is from a Masechet Tirdekit Brachot. All right, with the first one, the first Gemara. And Rabbi Levi Bar Chama said, Rabbi Shimon ben Laki said, in the name of Rabbi Shimon, God said to Moses, ascend to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you the stone tables and the Torah and the mitzvah that I have written that you may teach them. Meaning that God revealed to Moses not only the written Torah, but all of the Torah, and that it would be transmitted through the generations. The tablets, so-called, right, are the Ten Commandments that were written on the tablets of the covenant. The Torah is the five books of Moses. The mitzvah, what is the mitzvah that he said in the verse? The mitzvah is the Mishnah, which includes explanations for the mitzvot and how they were to be performed. We'll get it in a minute again. And that I have written refers to the prophets and writings written in the divine with divine inspiration. That you may teach them refers to the Talmud, which explains the Mishnah. These explanations are the foundation, right, for the rulings of practical halacha. This verse teaches that all aspects of Torah were given to Moses from Sinai. All aspects. Prophets, oral Torah, Mishnah, Talmud, everything in total was given to Moshe Rabbeinu on Mount Sinai. Everything, there is I don't think I brought it in the source sheet, but there is a famous limud, famous teaching in the Gemara that says every new sentence, every new halacha that any sage in any generation after Mount Sinai thought on has given to Moshe and Mount Sinai. Even if you don't know it. Even when he thought, that's my chiddush, that's my thing that I said, that's originally mine. No one said it before me, no. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave it to Moshe on Mount Sinai. Now we can discuss, how can it be? We don't know, it's not for the Torah itself. But this is total, is a very practical, very basic and essential thing to understand before we approach the Talmud. We need to understand that the Talmud, thank you Priel for bringing it, let's start with the Mishnah. We know that the Mishnah, what is the Mishnah, we'll see in a minute. We know that the Mishnah, it's not a regular book. It's not a regular text. Like we know that the Siddur that we pray with is holy. We, some of us kiss it when we close it. We put it, we pay it with respect. It won't come with us to the washroom. We know to respect it as well as all the other textbooks the Jewish tradition has. Starting with the Mishnah, following the Talmud, with all its terdekates, with all its masachtot, how we call it in Hebrew, following everything else that would be written. Why? Because we believe that in every and each book that was written, is being written right now, and will be written, there is something, and there is a finger of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of God in it. That's a very basic and essential thing for us to internalize and to understand. And the Rambam, I'm going to skip it now, Hakdamat HaRambam, the Mishnah, the Rambam, we just mentioned it. He has this entire introduction to the Mishnah. It's very, very good learning. There is the entire translation into English on online. You can look for it later. The Ramban introduction to the Mishnah, just Google it. You'll find everything. It's so good because it gives you the entire, it covers like everything. It doesn't keep any corner empty. And you see in source number 5, he gives an example. And behold for you an example. When the Holy One blessed thee, said to Moshe, you shall live in booth 7 days. What is booth, right? This is Sukkot, right? But Sukkot is Shvu'ot Yamim. Afterwards, he made known that this booth is an obligation on males. We don't know, right? We know that females, nashim, are dismissed, don't need to sit in a sukkah. That's a discussion in the halacha. Why? Because we know that nashim, that women, are pturah, they're dismissed from mitzvot aseh she'azman graman. That's in halacha, in rabbinical halacha, that says, if the mitzvah, the halacha, is connected to a specific time, to a specific time slot during the day, during the year, during the month, whatever it is, it's valid in one specific time, and in the other time it's invalid anymore, like vanishes, then women will be dismissed. Why? What about today when women are... We can discuss everything later. But this is one of the things that not written in the Torah. But we do it today. I have to tell you more than that. I think maybe more than 60, maybe even 75%, all right, 3/4 of our Jewish daily observant lives are more based on Torah Shebe'al Peh, on oral Torah, than on the written Torah. Most of us, when we have an halachic question, we will not open the 5 books of Moses. We will not find answers to most, 75%, even more, than our questions here. Because our lives are very much shaped from what our ancestors, our sages has taught us, what they have written. For example, washing our hands before eating bread. For example, it's not written in the Torah. Right? That reason, wash your hands before you eat bread. But we do it. You're Jewish, you're observant, you keep halacha. Before you eat bread, you're going to wash your hands. I don't know, making kiddush. This is like one of the very Jewish things, sitting in Leila Seder in Passover. It's not written in the Torah, sit in Leila Seder. We need to understand that, to internalize it from one thing to another, in order that. This is one of the most significant things in Jewish identity. It's not written in the Torah. Just for your ears to understand how significant and how important is those kind of codexes to our Jewish identity. But remember what we said? We said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moses, this Torah is oral Torah. It's not written Torah. How can we have huge libraries? Like we're the book nation, right? Am HaSefer. That's how we call it in Hebrew. Even in the Quran, in the holiest book of the Muslims, of the Islam tradition, the Jews are written as Am HaSefer. Refers to Am Sefer, the nations of books. Now, right, because we have the Torah, that's a book, right? We have the Torah right behind me, that's a book. But not only because of that. We are religion and nation of books. We learn all the time. We read all the time. All the time. Not only holy books. Even science fiction, even everything. That's amazing. That's a religion likes to read. Newspaper, whatever. Tweets, everything. But we like to read. But how do we write the oral Torah. How do we write the Mishnah and the Talmud? It's because this is not the Talmud. How do we write the oral Torah and the Talmud if we know explicitly that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, don't do it? Please open the colorful thing that you have here, the timeline. All right? Let's go through a journey in time. All right? We start with the creation of the world, right? That's back then. That's here. It's a -3761. Add 1,000 years. Oh, it's 5782. This is the exact number of this year. All right? We know there is 10 generations. The Mishnah says it's from Adam to Noah. Noah is going to read this Shabbat. All right? Birth of Noah back then. There is 10 generations. We know it from Noah to Abraham. All the entire three parashot of the beginning of Sefer Bereshit takes, look how much, more than 2,000 years. Look at that. Almost 2,000 years. Three parashot. This is only three parashot at the beginning of Bereshit. Do you know how long it takes for Sefer Dvarim? The entire book of Dvarim, how long it takes, according to history?
Less than
40 days. Think about the proportions. Right? It's fascinating. After that, we have our patriarchs. So we have Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Afterwards, we know what happens. Vayakom melech hadash, how Sefer Shmot is open. Vayakom melech hadash asher lo yada et Yosef. There is a king that rose up. He didn't know acknowledge of Yosef, because we know that Bereshit ends with the gathering of Yosef and his brothers and his siblings all together. And after such generations, there was Ra'av. I don't say like everyone didn't have enough food. People went back to Egypt, and there was a Pharaoh. There was a king who didn't like and didn't know Am Yisrael. They became servants. So the Israel were in Egypt. And afterwards, we exiled Egypt with Moshe Rabbeinu. And we were back to the desert. And this is the entire Shmot, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Dvarim, all those books appears in what is called around like 50 years, not more than that. All right? Afterwards, we have the judges. After Moshe Rabbeinu dies, we said, Moshe kibel Torah misinai u'masara le'Yehoshua, to Joshua. Joshua is our first judge. We have our judges. Afterwards, we have our kings. We have King David. We have his son, Shlomo, Solomon. We have more kings. We have the division in the Jewish kingdom back then between the Israel kingship and the Judaic kingdom. We have two different kings, two different kingdoms. Afterwards, we have the Great Assembly. What's the Great Assembly? We have the second temple, the first temple in the Shlomo HaMelech built. I'm sorry, I skipped that. Shlomo HaMelech, Solomon the king, he built the first temple, right? He was destroyed. He was destroyed. Afterwards, we came back to build the second temple with Ezra and Nehemiah. Those are the two last books of the Tanakh before the Divrei HaYamim, which is like a conclusion. The two last books of the Bible, the Tanakh, or Ezra and Nehemiah. All right. And we build the second temple, and here the Tanakh ends. The Bible ends when we know what is called Hatzharat Koresh. The Koresh, I don't remember exactly the name in English of Koresh, but Koresh was one of the kings of Paras, of the Persian Empire back then. And he gave to Ezra and to Nehemiah the approval. You can go back to, after the very, very long exile back then, you are allowed to go back to Eretz Israel, to the land of Israel, and you're allowed to build your temple. But this is where the Tanakh ends. The Tanakh?
Cyrus.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Koresh in Hebrew, I remember that. Some of you who visited in Israel, in the National Israeli Museum in Jerusalem, there is what is called, you can see there the Hatzarat Koresh, which was literally found. You can see it like as an oval script. It's fascinating. You can see what it's written there in the language of like 3,000 years ago. And then the Tanakh ends. We don't know what happened then, because the Tanakh ends. There is no more new books from the Tanakh. This is another fascinating discussion. Who edited the Tanakh? When did it finish? Why there are no more books? But it finished.
Why are the Maccabees not inside?
Why the Maccabees are not inside of it? Exactly. What is inside? What is outside? There's a lot of discussion. What can get into the Tanakh? What is not? Why is, I don't know, Job? There is a huge book of Job, like 40 chapters. One of the biggest of Job. Job is like, the Gemara itself says in one point that Job is never happened. It's a probe. The entire book of Job, where he suffered and his children were killed and his wife, everything, it's a probe. Why is it written in the Torah? The book of Jonah. We discussed it, whoever you was with me in my shiur before Yom Kippur. We discussed this book of Jonah doesn't refer to Am Israel. It's not for the Jews. Jonah is a prophet that runs away to the people of Nineveh. They're not Jews, they're Gentiles. Why do they need to get them back in tshuva? There's no need. Why are they reading the Tanakh, right? There's a lot of discussions about it. But the Tanakh ends there. And then we start what we call the Second Temple period. It's a very fascinating period because the only text that we have, originally text from there, is from Josephus Flavius. You know from Josephus Flavius? That Yosef ben Matityahu, he was a Kohen back then at the Second Temple. And he turned into, he became Roman. Well, back then, because the entire empire was a Roman Empire. And he became Roman, and he used to write and to document whatever he saw.
In English, they refer to him as Josephus.
Josephus, thank you. Thank you, Josephus. Thank you. But this is one of the... But the other thing that we have from the Second Temple time is the Mishnah. But if the Mishnah, the Oral Torah, would not be written, we would not have known... Only from Josephus, that's his name. Only from him we would have known what happened back then. If no one would write the Mishnah. But why did the Mishnah was written? What happened? Look at your source sheet, please. At source number... Oh, just see it at source number 8. that's amazing. When we said that we're not allowed to write the Torah, the Oral Torah, so in one of the Masachtot, one of the Tirdakis, of the books, of the Gemara, it's called the Teruma book, all right? In the Teruma book, which is a written oral Torah, Rabbi Yochanan said, those who write halachot are considered like those who burn the Torah. And one who learns from written halachot does not receive the reward of studying Torah. And this is written inside, and we read it, all right? That's written down. That's absurd, all right? That's really interesting. So what happened? Why did the oral Torah was ended and written?
You would assume that this was a part of the original oral Torah, and that it hadn't been written down, and it's only after the fact when Yochanan ben Zakkai said, "Okay, write it down." So this statement that you're calling on was then written down.
Beautiful, but this is not Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. This is another Rabbi Yochanan later from the day, and exactly we'll get it in a minute. Yes.
There's another belief that which is passed down by mouth is more reliable.
Which is written down. Yeah. That's right. Back then, all the way, all right, from the very beginning, let's say not from the very beginning, from the Mount Sinai, all right, all the way to the Second Temple, nothing was written down. Now you can say from the other thing, you know, if something is being transferred orally from a father to his son, from a mother to her daughter, there could be a lot of mistakes. A lot of different interpretation. Maybe they did not understand correctly. But that's fascinating. There is no one evidence in the entire Jewish history of someone who thought that the four species doesn't include an etrog. There is no one evidence of it. Nothing. That's fascinating. Well, I don't know, like the sukkah is not a sukkah. Or let's say that tefillin, the Torah says, right, we are men, we wear tefillin. And the Torah says about tefillin, right, they're talking, it's very mysterious what tefillin is. But there is no one evidence throughout Jewish history that says that tefillin are not black. Not even one. How do we know that? How did people painting and in color of black the tefillin throughout history? Yes, this is oral Torah. It was so important to the Jews back then to transfer it from generation to generation that they actually kept it. They literally kept it, and that's why we have it today. But what happened? Look at source number 9. From the time, now we're talking about the Second Temple. There's a lot of problems in the Second Temple that people were very cruel to each other. We have the Roman who came and they destroyed. You have Titus, how do you call him? Titus, I don't know.
Titus.
I don't know if you've been to Rome. You can see there is the huge gate, the victory gate, right? In Rome, you can see on the gate itself, you can see that they took pieces, they took the menorah from Beit HaMikdash. It's still there. We know that what happened there, but the Jews weren't so tzaddikim back then. But look what happened. From the time that the disciples of the students of Shammai and Hillel, if you want to know who Shammai and Hillel here, you have here both. They're both on the first page of the important figures of the generation of Tanaim. You can read it later. So from the time the students of Shammai and Hillel grew in number, and there were disciples who did not attend to their masters to the requisite degree, dispute proliferate. proliferated. Thank you. Thank you. Among the Jewish people, and the Torah became like two Torahs. What happened? What happened? Something happened. Jews became too, let's say, a little bit to argue, to fight. No. I remember someone told me something else. I remember. No. My mother used to tell me something. No. I don't agree with you. I think it's supposed to be different. What are you talking about how to light the candles of Hanukkah? I think we need to start with seven candles and just take one off every night. No. What, you're serious? Let's say to Shammai, you're serious? No, we need to start with one candle and to keep on going until we reach seven candles in Hanukkah. There started to get arguments. But what happened here in this specific timeline, time slot of history, that right now, only now, disputes happen. What happened? You know? What happened? Look at the timeline. What do you think happened in that specific time? Why did the machlokot happen? Why did the dispute
happen? Sanhedrin broke up.
What?
The Sanhedrin was...
Excuse me? The
Sanhedrin.
The Sanhedrin, okay, it was broken up, that's right. That's right. What else? What? What is it?
Yeah,
speak up. What?
The temple was destroyed.
The temple was destroyed. But even the first temple was destroyed and did not happen in the first temple. You know what happened when the second temple was destroyed? We lost the prophecy. There was no prophecy after the second temple was destroyed. The Gemara, I just learned it today, in Baba Batra, says, one of the other Masachtot, say that what after the destruction of the second temple, the only prophets were Shotim, which are like the crazy people, and children, the Tinokot. Those are the people who got the prophecy. The prophecy vanished from the world. Why? That's a fascinating question. But that's in that specific timeline, it has such an impact on Jewish history, because in that specific time in history, we moved from being a nation of prophecy, that if we have a question, we can go to the Sanhedrin, we can go to the Great Assembly, but we have prophets who can tell us what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. We move from being that nation to being the nation of sages, of Chachamim. All right? We move from being prophets to become wise, to relying on rabbis. The first rabbi appears after the destruction of the Second Temple. There is no such thing as rabbi before the destruction of the Second Temple. There's no such term as rabbi. Now think how could we be Jews without rabbis, right? That's like think of Judaism without rabbis. It's totally different. And you know, that's fascinating, and maybe we'll give a shiur on that. Because I did a research on it. You know who, there is still a nation, still a group of people who preserve and maintain the same, exactly the same Judaism of before the destruction of the Second Temple. You know who?
Karaim.
No, not the Karaim. The Karim, even were after the destruction, even according to the Gemara. You know who? The Ethiopian Jews. The Ethiopian Jews, right. Ethiopian Jews, we believe, from the 2.5 tribes. They got them in Asher. There's a lot of opinions. But we know there were tribes who were, historically we know, there are evidence, who were exiled all the way to Africa before the Second Temple was destroyed and stayed there. And only when the State of Israel was established, and we started hearing that there are people who call them Jews, and they live in Ethiopia and in other states in Africa, but specifically in Ethiopia, and the Israeli government back then, they were very suspicious about it, because we were a new country. The situation in Ethiopia, they had this very, this tyrant, and he killed everyone. He was very, very Christian. They had a lot of trouble. The Israeli government was very, very suspicious. About the Ethiopian Jews back then, because they thought they only want to come to Israel to live in Israel. But after an halachic study, do you know who did it? The most famous halachic study, it's from Rabbi Ovadia Yosef. He took this as his project to life. And he studied this halachically, historically, researchedly, academically, everything. He was outstanding in that. He got to the conclusion that these people are Jews. They are brothers and sisters, our cousins from like 2,000 years ago. And they stayed in Ethiopia and maintained the same tradition from back then in the Second Temple. More than that, the moment there is evidence, and you can see it on YouTube, search for that. When they were brought to Israel, back then in the 80s, in the 90s, when they brought to Israel the Ethiopian Jews, and they came, they landed in Israel, some of them asked the pilot and the we want to go to Beit HaMikdash. We want to go to the temple. Where is it? Take us there. We were in Israel. We're in Jerusalem. That's how they call it. We're now take us to the temple. And there's a teacher that says that or a flight attendant. She cried. She was the one who told this woman that Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Think about that. Like we're like 2,000 years, we know there's no Beit HaMikdash, and they're a coming group of people. They ask, I want to go and see Beit HaMikdash, and you are the one who's going to tell them, I'm sorry, there is no Beit HaMikdash anymore. And we're like, what do you think about why do we need to fast in Tisha B'Av? We don't miss a Beit HaMikdash. We don't know what it was. How can I miss or be sad of a destruction of something that I don't remember, I haven't experienced? Some of us think that. And there's a lot of voices like that in Judaism today. But look at the Ethiopian Jews. They did not know it was destroyed. They did not know it was destroyed. So this is an example of Jews that did not have what we call the rabbinical system, the halacha, the mishnah, did not have all of this. Because they stayed from the very essence of prophecy. All right? So what happened? We don't have a lot of time. We have 5 minutes, so we'll try to finish quickly. So what happened? We lost the prophecy. And we had questions. And we don't know what to do with them. So one Jew said one thing, and the other Jew said another thing, and the third Jew said a third thing. I don't know, there's a famous joke that, all right, two Jews, three opinions, right? So that was correct back then. And look what the Rambam says in source number 10. But when the diligence of the students towards wisdom slackened, and their reasoning weakened, in comparison to the reasoning of Hillel and Shammai, what happened is that there were big rabbanim, big rabbis. And what happened is that through generation, the wisdom try a little bit decreased. They became less and less wise like the rabbis. And they forgot what the rabbi said. And what happened? Rabbi, I want you to remember this name. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. There's a lot of streets named after them in Israel, right? Rehov HaNasi, Rehov Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Rabbi Yehuda, the president, HaNasi, all right? He was one of the most important Jews throughout history. Because what did he do? He lived in the last... He didn't see the temple. He wasn't alive during the temple time. During the second temple. Alright? He lived in Israel. He did not live in Babylon. Right? He lived in Israel, but he was not in Jerusalem back then. He were up there in Beit Sha'arayim, in Tzipori, up in northern Galilee. He is like fifth generation, and you'll find him here at the last page. He's the fifth generation, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. He's the last one. The fifth generation of the Tanaim, of what we call today the generation of the Mishnah, Tanaim. And he said something, he said, if I'm not going to do something, Torah will be, people will forget, will be forgotten. If I'm not going to do something now, people will forget the Torah, the oral Torah. We have the written Torah, he had the written Torah. But if he would not stand up and say, I'm sorry, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I need to do something here. And he had courage. All right? He had a lot of courage. Because this is halacha we saw. If you write down, like burning the Torah. But he said, we cannot continue like that. Because they were beginning to spread. And he didn't know, but there was a lot of... An exile to Babylon was just in the doorstep of it. And think what would have happened if he would not write everything down. And they would have just spread throughout the globe. We would not have anything today. There were no Jews. Think about the consequences of if he would not do what he did. And he said, and quoted from Tehillim, in from Psalms, in source number 11, this is one of the verses that are very they're very familiar with Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi. Et la'asot le'Hashem heferu toratecha. It is the time to act for the Lord, for they have violated your teaching. All right? We need to do it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm sorry, I need to do this sin in order for other generations to continue the Torah. So what did he do? He had this, he was brilliant. He had in his mind, and he had documented, and he had a lot of stuff from a lot of Rabbanim, a lot of what we call today Tanaim, all the way back to the first temple, and he took everything he knew. He went on a journey and asked them, and interviewed them, and documented everything. He took everything he knew, and wrote it down, edited it, all right? It continued that the researchers and the academic researchers they disagree whether it was him, maybe someone after him, but we know he is one of the main characters that did it. And he edited what we have today, the Mishnah. Mishnah from the word of Lishnot. Lishnot is to Nalishanot. That's interesting because a lot of people say, yeah, the Mishnah, the Halacha is what?
Isn't it here?
That's Lishmo. What is Lishnot?
Repeat.
To repeat, thank you. Lishnot is to repeat. It's called the Mishnah. It's not called the book of teaching. It's not called the Gemara, the Talmud. Leshanen. Leshanen is to learn again and again and again and again until you memorize it. That's absurd because this is written. All right, we don't need to memorize it anymore. But it's called the Mishnah. Because the people who write it, who are written here, they memorized it. They had it in their mind. And what do we need to do? We need to learn this more and more and more so we'll be more... our knowledge will expand in our Jewish history. What is the Mishnah exactly? Briefly, before we finish. The Mishnah is a set of six volumes. All right? It covers almost every part of Judaism. Almost every part. From brachot, blessings, prayer, kriyat shema, all the way to nezikin, to what happens between neighbors. You show your yard. That's what I learned in my yeshiva. I'm an avrech in Beit Midrash Zichron Dov, here in Or HaChaim. And we learned this year the halachot, the laws of shechinim, of neighbors. What happened if you and your neighbors you disagree on spaces? That's written in the Mishnah. All right. What happens if you find a lost? Someone lost something. You find it in the street. Do you need to can you take it? Can you go after it? Do you need to find the owner? What do you do? What do you do with the Beit HaMikdash? How do you sacrifice? All right? How do you celebrate Sukkot? How do you wear on tefillin? Everything that you can... Shabbos. Think about all the laws of Shabbos, all right? Shabbos in the Torah, it's not so big issue, right? We know the law of psukim. The Shabbos, all the we know today, don't drive, don't use electricity, don't... In the Torah, there's not a lot of halachot regarding Shabbos. The entire melachot, toledot, regarding Shabbos, everything is in those six volumes of Mishnah. The entire Judaism, everything is inside the six volumes. But before he did it, there was nothing. Everything was passed by generation to the next generation. And why did we get to that point? Now we know what the Mishnah is. What is the Gemara? And what are we going to learn in the next meetings that we have? First of all, the next meeting would be another frontal class, another speed, shiur, right? Another class. Regarding, like we did here, introduction to the Oral Torah, we're going to do introduction to the Gemara itself, to this book, focusing on that book. Afterwards, we're gonna in the third and fourth meeting. We're gonna have much more experience. Gonna experience the practice and practice the text. What did I want to tell you here? The Gemara, the Talmud, is like the Mishnah on the Mishnah. What is the Mishnah on the Mishnah? The Mishnah was written, we just know, because there was a lot of flaws and people tried to forget it and people didn't know exactly what to do. Someone did that, the other one did that. There were a lot of confusion. What to do with halachot? Because everything was oral. What is the Gemara? The Gemara took the Mishnah hundreds of years after. All right? They took the Mishnah, and because we're Jews and we forgot, even when Rabbi Yudanus, he wrote it down. And now I'm talking about afterwards, like 200-300 years afterwards, in not to not 100 to 800, but decades afterwards, in Babylon, when they had the Mishnah. But questions began to rise. Wait, why did he write that? But I heard from my mother something else. But I know there's another source that says something else. But this is why do you think this is the halacha? And Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi did not do easy life to the other generations, because in the Mishnah he did not just say this is the halacha, that's it. He quoted all the opinions. If there was a dispute and a disagreement between two rabbanim, he quoted the opinions in the Mishnah. And sometimes he did not say who wins. He did not say who is correct. According to who? And then the people afterwards, they read. They say, oh, what should I do with let's say, Nerot Hanukkah? How should I light up Hanukkah candles? Let's see what I do. Oh, wait, Bet Hillel says 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, wait, Bet Shammai, another opinion says 7, 6, 4. What am I going to do? Rabbi Yehuda did not tell us what to do a lot of times. Sometimes he did. But a lot of the time, he did not tell us what to do. That's why we have the Gemara. The Gemara is like a Mishnah of the Mishnah. There was a lot of open questions from the Mishnah. And then there was a time of what we called Amoraim. And we'll get it. This is exactly our topic for next time. We'll discuss this very essential book and why it became so dramatical, more than the Mishnah, in our daily lives. Because the discussions here expand much more than the Mishnah. They expand much more than halacha and laws. They discuss your philosophy. They discuss your stories about Jewish tradition, stories about Jewish life. How should we act? What is good? What is bad? What is moral? What is immoral? How should we live our lives? How should we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What should we do with other nations? What should we do with political questions? What should we do with a lot of stuff? Everything is being discussed here in this Gemara. I think I'm going to stop here. This question for you, God. I think we're 5 minutes late than what we thought. I hope this was a vision and view of history of the mission, the Oral Torah. We did not understand it, how we came to what we do today, the tradition. What is tradition? What are halachot? There are customs, there are mitzvot, there are averot, there are sins. Don't worry, we'll figure everything out in this five-meeting series. Thank you all for coming. I really, really, really hope to see all of you next time, even and bring some more people that you think can be interested in it. You don't have to be in one of them to be in the other. You can just come, whatever you want. You can tell the other people. Thank you so much. I'm here for questions if you have. And have a good night, everyone. Thank you so much.